Eternal hails and greetings, my black metal brothers. You're listening to a very special episode of Toilet Radio. I am Damon, the Winter Damon Wiener, and with me I've got a couple of great experts in black metal. Today we're going to give you the complete and total satanic history of black metal. First of all, I'd like to introduce my guest today, the Necro Wraither. Hi, Necro Wraither, how are you today?
Infernal hails and greetings.
So you have a tremendous history working with some of the heroes of black metal directly back in the golden days, back when metal was really dangerous. Can you tell us just a little bit about that before we jump right into it?
That's correct. I'm originally from Hell, Michigan, but in the 80s, I moved to Oslo, Norway, and opened up my own sugary confectionery store called Under a Funfetti Moon. And while running my store, many of the young black metalers would come in and enjoy sweets and treats to get ready for their long recording sessions.
That's just fantastic. I can't wait to hear some of those stories from back in the day. But before we jump in, we've got another excellent guest here today. Someone who knows the ins and outs of the genre, every major and minor character, every big event and little church burning. I'd like to introduce Professor Blaszko Dunkelheit from the University of Blaszczykiew. Professor, how are you today?
Hello, friends. I am doing well. How are you?
Doing very well, Professor. It's an honor to have you on the show. Listeners might recognize...
It is an infernal honor to be here.
Listeners, of course, listeners are very familiar with your very famous books on the subject. You wrote Lords of Chaos. You wrote Kings of Upset. You wrote Princes of Discord. And later, Dukes of Trouble. All great, great books on the history of black metal. So we're super pleased to have you on the air. And again, eternal hails to you, sir, as well.
Oh, yes, of course. And of course, if you look at any of these books, you will find that my name is not on them because I write under a ghost name on each one. And I make sure to wear a nice black hood over my head as a type so that people will not know it's me because my anonymity is very important to maintain the dangerousness of the black metals.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also, it looks super cool.
Very cool.
So, I think that, you know, we're all here for one reason, to recount the history of black metal. And, you know, none of us would be here if we didn't, you know, truly love the genre. You know, how about we talk a little bit about what draws us to it? How did we fall in love with this most satanic and evil music?
Well, first I want to clarify that I do not love anything. Love is for fucking wussies. I hate everything. I just find that in life, I hated black metal the least. When I used to live out in the woods, I would go out there and I just smell things I didn't like flowers and posies and pansies. And it made me so angry that I just needed to find the music to be angry at. So that is how I found the greatest genre ever to hate, which is black metal. And I hate it a lot.
Necro Wraither, how about you? How did you begin to appreciate this most infernal genre?
Life is like a super sour warhead that you've had in your mouth for way too long. It's kind of like a package of red vines that you've left under the couch for a year. That's what black metal is. That's how I feel all the time. It hurts your teeth.
Yeah, I agree. That's very true.
Interesting. Very interesting. I myself, I am mostly interested in the deist implications of the music. Personally, every blast beat I hear allows me to take a closer walk with my Lord and Savior, Satan. You know, in the past, I had grown up in the Church of Latter-day Saints, and it just didn't quite make as much sense as devoting my life to Satan. I of course, still volunteer on the weekends with the Mormons to help help children who can't read very well, but when I'm not doing that, gosh darn it, I am Satan incarnate. You can tell by the intolitarian backpatch that I have on the back of my yellow Mormon vest. So, I guess we should start from the beginning, if that seems like the best place to start, right? What do you guys think?
There is no beginning and no end. We can only start at what is known.
Life is either a bag full of candy or an empty bag of candy. You can do whatever you want.
Good, yeah, good call, good call. So, I guess we need to begin... the story of black metal really begins in that frozen tundra we all know and love, Cleveland, Ohio. The year was 1972, and a man named Judge Reinhold was a successful power forward for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Unfortunately, during a run late into the finals, he had sustained a career-ending injury with an accident involving a banana peel and a falling piano. And just was never the same after that.
He snapped his carcass right in half.
He lost 4 feet of height after that accident, and he could never play power forward again at that competitive level. So after a few seasons in the D League and the European League, he eventually called it quits and realized he needed to start a new career in his life. So Judge Reinhold, he later changed his name to Kronos, and he decided to start making music like he had heard in those NBA locker rooms that all the athletes were bopping their heads to. So he began with a hard rock and roll band, but quickly realized that he didn't know how to play any instruments. And that really was the beginning, in my mind, of this darkened satanic music is Judge Reinhold's inability to play the guitar. But you know, that's where I started my path. How about you, Professor Blasco?
Well, it's very well known that when Venom first started with Kronos, he wanted to go a bit more for a glam new wave of British heavy metal sound that was quite typical with fun and sex and drugs and rock and roll. So he created his first album, Suck My Sexy Love Bite, and it did not do as well as he had hoped. So eventually, in order to sell himself just a little bit better, he had eventually gone and to a more satanic and dark occult route with his other albums, which is how the name black metal was first started, with the album that I don't quite remember the name of right now.
Well, I guess we could go back even further. Black metal didn't necessarily begin in 1974. I mean, there are so many influences, so many deep artistic veins to mine. I guess Professor Blasco, you had written about it in Dukes of Discord about the real roots of the occultism that informs the genre. How about you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, look, to really understand black metal, we first need to understand its roots in rock and roll occultism. I mean, black metal really started at the first thunderclap of Thor's hammer crashing down, and man looked up and fear shivered through him for the very first time. But a little more relevantly, many people don't know this, but Jimmy Page, revered guitarist of legendary OG metal outfit Van Halen, was an active occultist. Famed novelist, poet, magician, and dentist Aleister Crowley actually took Page under his wing for many years and eventually sold his home to Jimmy, and also sold him his very first wife, the at the time 13-year-old Maddox Jolie Pitt.
Ah, yes, of course. Pedophilia was, at that time, less frowned upon, you know, in those days. That was before the PC police, you know, marched all over the scene in their jackboots telling everyone to stop transporting minors across state lines.
Yes.
Dark day it was when they appeared on the scene.
Yes, indeed. I mean, who really is the true fascists here? So
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
That's true. Very true, sir. Now, this, I mean, yes, pedophilia was a bit more acceptable back when this happened in about, I believe it was 1956. But it worked until 1957 when the great Elvis Presley performed his infamous routine on the Ed Sullivan Show, where he did his gyrating crotch dance for the devil and hypnotized many women across the nation to do such nefarious deeds as perhaps no longer honoring their parents or maybe even hiking their skirt up past their ankles, just all sorts of true cult, disgusting satanic worship.
It was indeed very, very cool. But, you know, he and alongside some of his other contemporaries had began their journey down the left-hand path. Jerry Lee Lewis, of course, dabbled in the occult as well. Great Balls of Fire was a reference to one of the many churches he and Carl Perkins had burned down while in an ether frenzy.
Definitely true. The civil rights movement was mostly church burnings, from what I understand.
Yes, that is my understanding from public schooling here in the United States as well. But from what I understand, Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and with Johnny Cash, they often went on ether frenzies, burning down churches. They were known as the Million Dollar Quartet. They consume millions of dollars worth of ether in these frenzies.
They also did at least $1 million worth of damage to churches across the nation, if you consider inflation of money and such. It was about $1 million back then, which was a lot of money.
An inconceivable amount of money. Back then, you could buy a hamburger for a hug. So it was an entirely different time. So with this $1 million quartet, you know, setting blazes across the country, burning down churches, doing ungodly amounts of ether, touring the country and corrupting young women, there was the first real backlash at the time. Angry parents would band together, and they would burn their records, which was actually only encouraging to these gentlemen, as they saw burning their records as a sign of tacit approval of their further church burning.
The hypocritical fools, they don't realize that setting a blaze to the greatest artwork ever is truly an honor and a blessing.
One of the greatest crimes during this time was parents burning their children's red hot dollars.
Yeah, you must have experienced.
Is that true? $300, yes, it's very, very warm.
That must have been a tremendous hardship for you at the time.
It was incredibly difficult. In Oslo, children love their sweet, sweet candy along with fish. I tried to combine them to make Norwegian Swedish.
Hey, brother. What? No, fuck! Don't let me interrupt. Keep. I'm just so excited for this tale woven in Swedish history.
I tried to create a new candy called Norwegian Swedish Fish. It didn't work out well.
That's a terrible shame. What do you think happened?
There was either too much fish or not enough fish.
Tale as old as time.
But I just fondly remember my mater making me some great candied mackerel. Oh, so good.
It's funny that you mentioned mothers. I remember a young Varg Vigernes coming into my sweet shop. He would always say, "Mama, can I get a push pop?" And his mother would say, "No, Varg. You remember what happened last time you got a push pop. How can we explain that to the emergency room again? And he would say, Mama, I won't put it there again. I promise. True story.
That's amazing. That's amazing that you had such close contact with these legends, these absolute kings of chaos.
That's a, oh, I'm sure. Gonna write, I'm gonna we would have them come in all the time. Samith from Emperor, Varg, Dead, Euronymous. They would spend hours in my sweet shop. Did you know the infamous Black Circle was started in my very own candy shop?
Yeah, it's true. It was named after a black licorice circle.
That's true. Young Varg Vigorness actually dropped an entire bag of black licorice on the floor. He tried to pick it up, but he was so stupid, he ended up creating an entire circle around him. He cried for hours until his mom came and took him out of the circle. True story.
That is incredible. Let's give a little bit of background of this very famous figure in black metal, Varg Vigorness. Professor Blaszko, you were giving us his origin story before we began recording today. Why don't you share that with our audience?
Oh yes, I have. I have noted many things about this young man's life, and it's very interesting and long and deep, but I don't know, kind of not really. But anyway, so in a 2002 interview, when Varg was asked about his life, and of course, we can call him Varg, but his birth name is Caitlin Vigorness. So Varg is quoted as saying, oh, my story? Okay. It was never easy for me. I was born a poor black child. I remember the days sitting on the porch with my family, singing and dancing down in Mississippi. It wasn't until later that we immigrated to Norway, where I had the hardest time fitting in with other children. Now, a young Caitlin Vigorness, he didn't play well with others. He organized team sports was never quite his forte. Okay, due to his loner nature, he would make up his own games to play by his lonesome. Okay, he is often attributed as the inventor of quote-unquote drop ball, which I don't know if you are aware, but it was a game that was prominently featured in an episode of the popular modern cartoon series Adventure Time. A bit more well-known about Varg and his inventions was his love for a game he created known as Melon Roll. Melon Roll went as follows. You would jab a hunting knife deep into a melon, a large melon like a cantaloupe or like a honeydew, okay? And then he would jab this knife in like a cantaloupe, and he would roll it down the stairs to see if the handle sticking out at the top would stop it from reaching the bottom attending point. This would eventually be his and Euronymous's favorite game to play together.
Oh, that's just fun to play for hours. I remember playing that as a child as well. You know, eventually his boyish fun in Norway would take us to a dark and tragic and extremely evil place. But it wasn't until years later. In the meantime, across the world, you had the originators of occult rock and roll, and eventually Little Richard became involved with this satanic worship underground in the southern United States. He was actually the originator, the first person to use the term black metal in describing music. Yeah,
that's where black metal comes from, because from what I remember, Little Richard was black.
That is correct. Yes, that is absolutely correct.
Was it? Okay, good. I don't own a computer or a television or a book or any sort of cell phone or anything. I think all that just trash. It melts your brain.
Well, eventually, of course, his color of his skin would leave him completely excluded from the genre that he had been a proponent of, which is, you know, as it is, the master race of things. This is how we accept it. But we, you know, in going through the history, we don't want to forget that he was there, not as a wholly influential person, but at least 3/5 of an influential person.
Before we get any further into this, can one of you men tell me what the black person looks like?
Well, I'm from Utah, so no. Necro-Wraither, have you ever seen one?
Yes.
I don't know, that sounds scary.
Interestingly, the term black metal also started in Norway, completely different from what you guys were just talking about it. During a sleepover, Gal from Gorgoroth, on the Truth or Dare bet, stuck a whole bunch of milk duds in his mouth. He got up to 30 milk duds before they all exploded out. All the chocolate dripping down his face looked like black blood. That's how black metal was named.
Interesting you bring up Little Richard. For Little Richard had a session musician on guitar. He was a man named Korthon, and he was a Swedish transgendered man who established black metal's lo-fi sound by his inability to afford an amplifier and just playing his electric guitar acoustically while standing over an empty, dirty metal trash can and recording the sound it made from a modified tape answering machine.
So a true originator of sound. He invented the tape answering machine just to do this.
Actually, I don't think that's true.
I'm pretty sure it is. I'll check my sources, but I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm pretty sure you're a cock and you're wrong.
Well, agree to disagree. Please continue.
So anyway, after making this really zazzy new sound, he inspired these boys from Norway that, of course, as explained by their hijinks in the candy store, started the Inner Black Circle. Euronymous had a very good sense of humor, of course, he was known for. So when he liked to make jabs at Varg and make fun of him for crying like a little diaper baby over his black licorice falling all over the floor. And so they called it the Inner Black Circle just to make fun of him. And it was all at Euronymous' parents' antique shop and ice cream emporium, El Sado, which, as you guys know, is Spanish for ice cream. What? What's so funny?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just had a tickle under my nose.
What's so funny? What is funny about me saying ice cream?
I believe the name of the shop was Helados.
El Sados?
Yeah, I
know. That's what I said. I said it's El Sados, Spanish for ass cream.
I'm glad that you brought up Euronymous. A lot of people don't know his history, but he's been such an influential figure all throughout the world. His birth name, of course, was Julian Assange. And he later went on to create his own network of releasing government secrets. It was there that we learned that black metal actually began as a Cold War experiment to create perfect commercialized capitalist product. This was actually made by the Soviets, of course. But a young Euronymous, before getting involved with all of that, he was roommates and best buddies with Caitlin Vickers. They would constantly play wrestle together. They would hold hands on their way to the candy shop, as of course our Necro-Wraither can tell us about.
I could, but I won't.
Fair enough. And he was just such an important figure. Eventually, they met another young boy who went by the name of Dead. And I'm afraid that nothing is known about him. He's completely lost to history. We just know that there was a person that went by that name before disappearing entirely.
Well, Dead was known for his inability to deal with stress and anxiety. So at one point, Dead had a very sensitive bowels. So at one point, he was sitting in his room. They were all having a nice sleepover, which is common in that part of the world. And Dead, in his sleep, had shat all over himself. all over in his face, in his mouth, in the bed, just everywhere. It was everywhere. It was so funny. So your Onimus had taken his picture device and took lots of pictures of this and then used it for an album cover. And then Dead was so upset, he quit the band.
Tragic story. It's a tragic story. Mm. Of course, you know, these were far from the only people involved in the scene at the time. I mean, you had so many colorful figures. You had John Notvite of Dissection, a band that had started initially in Manchester as a skiffle band, before eventually making the trip over to Northern Europe and being inspired by and really getting to know and build a strong friendship of trust and even love with some of the boys in Mayhem.
I know about skiffles. I buy them all the time at Necrorether store.
They're delicious.
Basically, you had these young men who were so full of life, so full of youth, and just a carefree, upbeat attitude towards everything. They all got together and they all decided that, hey, I've been hearing this music that this Swedish transgendered man is making across the world, and we ought to try to replicate some of this sound. So it began with Henrik Mobus. He purchased a Fisher-Price cassette player for his little sister. His little sister was not interested, of course, so he took it back from her and decided to start their first recording studio. And it was there that some of the great hits of the era came out. You were hearing some of the darkest, most brutal, most satanic odes to pain and Satan and suffering and depression. The first hit out of the studio, of course, was "Shout at the Devil," that song we all know and love.
"Shout at the Devil" was quite important, but I believe the truest anthem that we in black metal could ever hope to look up to in pure satanic majesty would be "Running with the Devil." Because not only do you shout at him, but you run with him. So you and the devil, you're yelling and you're running and you're having a big smile on your face and a good time. And maybe perhaps you're yelling and yelling and people say, hey, you children, knock it off. And I'm like, shut up, I'm with the devil. You run down to the candy store and you get yourself a big old handful of skiffles and you shout and you run and you eat skiffles with the devil. That, my friend, is the truest notion of black metal.
What cemented black metal really was the third hit that came from this studio and set black metal out on its outsider status forever. Starting with "Shout at the Devil," moving to "Running with the Devil." You know, they were on a strength. They had a real strong run, and eventually, "To Hell with the Devil," put these bands forever in infamy in the public's mind. It was one thing to pal around with the devil, to yell at him, but to damn the devil to hell itself, just extremely transgressive music.
Definitely. I like that song because it's like at you're running with him, you're shouting at him, and at the end of the day, you're like, devil, you've eaten too many skiffles, man. You're going crazy. You got to go home. Okay, your home is hell, so go back there. Makes sense. After all this running and skiffles and yelling, devil's tired, needs a nap. Go home to hell. Hell with the devil. I remember.
I think maybe it would do our audience some good if we all went around the room and we named some of our perhaps our favorite black metal song of all time. I think that it gives the audience a better view of who we are and where we're coming from. Necrorether, what really speaks to you?
Two songs. The first is by the band Immortal, I Want Candy. I think that obviously speaks for itself. The other song is by Dark Throne, Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Extremely heavy music, extremely dark, extremely satanic.
Necrorator, you can't discuss those songs without bringing up Emperor's song, Gimme Chocolate.
I think that's certainly an important song.
I mean, perhaps it goes without saying, which is why you didn't say it.
Obviously.
Give Me Chocolate was a really divisive track released in these heady golden days of black metal. You had one side of the crowd that was like, yes, please give me chocolate. And the other side said, no, I have diabetes. This will not do. It really caused a schism within the scene. Eventually, DSBM was born of this. Diabetic suppressive black metal. They could not deal with this this endorsement of chocolate within their satanic music.
Schism was a pretty cool fucking song too.
The music video was so cool.
Oh, it was sick,
dudes.
Bro. Oh, it was fucking sick. You got the vein lady. Vein lady's got veins in her, and she's like, "Oh, look at this, pull it out of my head." And then she walks over to the other guy across the room, and she's like, "Listen, let me put my jawbone up on your jawbone, and let's be a one-person blue vein person lady."
That video was how I learned about sex.
The sick video. What's that anyway?
So I would say that my favorite black metal track of all time is Orinoco Flow. Initially by one of the dungeon synth progenitors, Enya. It's just a life-changing track for me. I never realized that music could be so bleak, even lacking the ringing treble-less guitars that we all know and love.
How could we forget that one of the founding members of the Section, Chester Bennington, killed himself for the love of Satan? Can't forget that.
It is true. There is a long history of suicide within black metal as a way to honor and be closer to the big red guy, the one that we are all here to talk about. That would be Satan, of course. If you'll remember, it wasn't too long ago that one of the most important figures in the Eastern black metal scene, Michael Carradine. He honored the satanic tradition in bringing black metal to Asia, and of course eventually fulfilling his honor of the Dark Lord by committing suicide in his honor, and also to get a really good nut out.
Man, I got a really good nut out every time I listen to Psy, boy. I tell you what, talk about the Asian metal boy there. They're fucking gnarly, man.
I think it would be a disservice to not mention the original band to come out of Asia, which is of course Ghostbath. They put forward a sound that had never been heard before by Western ears for the Eastern market, and their crossover success is really just a testament to the dark undercurrent that runs throughout this planet of people that want more and more evil and Satan in their ears.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, fellas. I ain't never heard of no Ghostbath, and if I tried to make an album like them, I don't think my parents would be very supportive.
That's a terrible shame, Professor Blaschko. Why don't you think your parents would support you?
Because they're fucking dead.
I actually met the guys from Ghostbath on their tour of Europe not too long ago. You want to know what they wanted?
What
fortune
they want?
Cookies with Tic Tacs inside them. I don't know why, but that's what I gave them. Best day's work ever.
How many Tic Tacs can you fit inside the fortune cookie?
Oddly enough, they just wanted one, so I gave them one Tic Tac inside fortune cookies.
Was it like
don't ask me, man.
The mint Tic Tac or the orange one that tastes good?
The mint Tic Tac. They wanted the white one inside the fortune cookie.
You don't think the white death taste of a white Tic Tac is delicious? Your American palate disgusts me.
It was around this time that a young man really made his mark on the scene and just came out of nowhere, inspired everyone across every band in pretty much every regional area over time. He was a striking man. He influenced crowds everywhere that he went, and they all took notice of his strong bones and facial features and sharp fashion sense, and they began to model themselves off of his various stylings and vocalizations.
Was he a white person?
Yes, he was a white person.
Oh, thank God.
He was actually the originator of taking a bold stance for the proud Aryan tradition. That man, of course, his name was George Clark, and I'd say roughly in 1992, he set off a whole string of crime and murder across all of Northern Europe that, you know, really defines the genre as we know it today. In addition, he had taught these younger boys this unique raspy vocalization technique, and it just caught on like wildfire. They couldn't get enough. They were all doing the George Clark, as they called it back in the day.
George Clark is the most beautiful man in the entire world. He has the truest features of a white, pure Aryan blood man. Born from Swedish and Norwegian parents, George Clark has unleashed devastation across all nations in the truest form of black metal possible. Now, it's quite interesting that George Clark had actually started the band with Euronymous's estranged son, of course, which is Carey McCoy. If you look at the two of them side by side in any sort of picture graph, you will indeed see the features are uncanny.
That is true. You know, we can talk all day about the many great things that George Clark has done for this genre, but we do need to acknowledge the potent strain of racism that he himself injected personally, firsthand, into black metal. If you were to look at National Socialist black metal, it really began with George Clark.
His hatred of dark chocolate is well known.
For a white chocolate man only, he was very, very insistent that you keep 60% cacao away from him.
Yes, he also wanted separate but equal chocolate and chocolate with almonds in it.
Just like he had high standards in his musical production, he also had very high standards in his confectionery treats.
It's important to note that he did these things. He had committed countless hate crimes across the nation. But those riffs, though, I mean, I could look aside 1,000 lynchings in his name, which he surely committed, because those riffs were so good.
You know, I think the social justice police like to say things like terms such as racism, which I don't understand. You know, it's if you are a lion, you have sex with lion. If you are a tiger, you go to the jungle and you find yourself a nice, sexy tiger. Don't have to come into my lion territory and tell me that you belong when you don't. I don't know what the tiger looks like either.
Well, thank you for doing that. That you giving us George Clark's exact speech in defense of himself when tried by The Hague for literally thousands of instances of hate crimes. He was, of course, executed, but his spirit lives on throughout black metal, throughout the world, and really beyond that, probably.
As people don't know this, but those are lyrics that he used when he was putting out, while he was awaiting trial for his execution. He was awaiting trial in Norwegian prison, and he was playing these songs on a keyboard, and quite frankly, I think those are his best work.
It's true. By that point, he didn't even need guitars, and instead, he invented EDM, or in this case, National Socialist Electronic Dance Music. It was the next big thing that took the world by storm. They couldn't.
I believe you're referring to house music, HAUS, house.
I believe that we have different names across our cultures.
I believe you're a cuck.
Tough but fair. It was there awaiting trial that he wrote the white power EDM anthem of a lifetime, Sandstorm, under the name Darude.
Now, listen, I have to interject. Sandstorm was Viking metal. It was not black metal.
Again, there are some quibbles with the exact nomenclature involved with Viking versus black metal versus National Socialist Electronic Dance Music versus house music.
Do you quibble with the man who fucks your wife as you watch? You cock.
Well,
listen, sir, I am a professor. Okay, I have a PhD in the university that I built myself as a 4x4 shed out on a mountain in Norway. You have to hack vice journalists up 40 miles to a point. That's my cat. Shut up, cat. I'm trying to do a podcast. Don't you know I'm busy? You meow one more time. It's going to be a problem. Daddy's talking.
We all agree that the University of Blaastrikhet is an accredited institution that is, you know, prestigious and well worth enrollment. But I will say that perhaps you might have your details wrong on this one.
Oh yeah, what do you know? Okay, I had interviews with Vice. Did Vice interview you? No,
they haven't. But they have.
That's just the truest defining. That is the truest defining validation of a black metal artist and expert. Is you have people from Vice come out and interview you. Well, if you don't have people from Vice talk to you, then you have no authority to talk to me. But what I know about the black metal.
We all know that the Necro Wraither has been interviewed by Vice, though.
Oh, yes, that's very true.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I was playing Candy Crush on my phone.
You seem to have a fairly one-track mind.
Well, that's sweet of you to say.
Son of a bitch.
Necro Wraither, what would you say is the most important aspect of black metal next in this chronology, in this timeline?
Well, I think you can't talk about black metal without talking about Fenriz from Dark Throne. Interesting story. He actually came into my shop. He said he was doing a lot of training and he needed all the gummy bears that I had. So I gave him about 10 pounds of gummy bears and off he went. Turns out he was training to become an American gladiator. He lost on the Eliminator.
It's a terrible shame. It was, it's
a national tragedy.
I believe that it was either Laser or Nitro that unfortunately sent the tennis ball to his trachea that unfortunately ended his life earlier.
Of course, it was always Laser. He's a true American hero.
It was an all loss, though. He was included in the Nintendo Entertainment System edition of American Gladiators, the video game, as a playable character. So,
I one time recorded my most popular album on a Nintendo system. It got 2 downloads on the Bandcamp.
Were those paid downloads or pay what you want?
You mean people get paid for music?
Well, not real musicians, of course, just the pop glossy bullshit, the posers that wish to inflict their homosexual tendencies into the scene.
Yeah, I'm fucking underground, man. Come on.
But before we can move on, we should discuss what the future of black metal looks like. We all have in our mind a bold prediction of where this sound evolves and where it takes us in the future and what kind of new and exotic places we could be looking at this.
Future evolution, bunch of cuck scientist bull. Okay, listen, man, there's no evolution in black metal. There only is black metal as it is. If you try to do anything that deviates from the original true concepts, then you are a simple poser. You will always be a poser. Okay, black metal started in 1942, and it stayed in 1942. There really was only one album ever written, and everybody else has just been posers.
That is the George Clark Manifesto. In his mind, you know, of course, the Reich never fell, and our glorious leader never, you know, blew his brains out in that bunker. But some of us, you know, ascribe to different ethos than George Clark's explicitly hateful views of black metal forever staying in 1942. For example, I think that you know, in the late 70s and early 80s, there were a lot of bands making great strides with pushing the sound to a new direction. You know, you had Winger, and you had Absurd. Those are the two big bands in my mind that were diametrically pushing black metal in two directions, splitting it as you would an atom.
My favorite was Wasp.
Very, very cool band. The song "Fuck Like a Beast" was of course outlawed by the degenerate harpy Tipper Gore. Because of her, we can no longer hear that song. But I recall it being good. I think.
I didn't know that was Wasp. What was that? What was that other song they made? Not that one. What was the other one?
Wasp.
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 The figure you're hearing, man, I'm saying it clearly is this. Wasp!
We don't have to
listen. I understand. Listen, I understand that things can progress. I'm an open-minded person at the end of the day. I understand. You can make music in 1984. It's fine.
No, I don't agree with a lot of the things being put out by some of the bands nowadays, but I think we can all agree that as long as we maintain the same aesthetic and tonal quality, and no one ever affixes a core to the end of their band, we can accept and embrace what they want to do.
Don't call it proto either, because evolution is a farce.
Professor Blasco Dunkelheit, I hear that you have a new book coming out. Do you want to plug that before we shut things down for the day?
Yes, my new book is called "Are You Here, God?" It's me, Varg, and it's actually a book I am ghostwriting for Varg Vikernes, and I didn't get his permission at all. But I respect the man so deeply that I just wanted to write it anyway in the best possible way that I could. If I was Varg Vikernes, what could I do to really say the things that I am thinking? Like if I were to say, like, okay, so you got the women out there, and it's like, are you some kind of Instagram whore, or are you some kind of, you know, stocky, big chested, got good loins and can make me a nice dinner in my house? No, I think that's what basically that's just about the entire book is what I want in a wife. Also, if any of you ladies are listening, my OkCupid profile is Dunkelheit 92, and listen, Kat, I'm doing a podcast. How come at times I have to tell you, you come in here, you start meowing, I'm doing a podcast. I'll feed you later. Daddy's trying to find a new wife. Stop it.
the only thing more important to me than blast beats, tremolo riffs, and hailing to the Dark Lord is finding the trad wife for me. We must get married in the temple, looking to have 12 children. Minimum. Minimum. No fat chicks either.
She's got to be like fucking Stargate. Just open wide and just create Aryan beauties for me to admire.
So, Necro Wraither, is there anything that you wanted to tell us before we close up for the day?
Two things. Playing next week at the Candy Shop is The Future of Black Metal, a little band from Buffalo, New York, formerly on Victory Records. They're called The Bunny the Bear. They're a mixture of synth pop, metalcore, and electronica. It's clearly the future of black metal. Also, I have a new book coming out called Yum Yum Yum, The Story of Burzum. The Sweetest Stories from the Sourest Man in Black Metal. Put out by Penguin Books. In Barnes & Noble soon.
Oh, okay. So now you're writing books about Vark too. Okay. So just everybody's just being the poser. Everybody, look, we got the professor here writing books. We all do it too to look cool. Don't you know I'm the only one who's supposed to do that? I did it first. Everybody's going to call you a poser on the internet.
Go eat a box of snow caps, pal.
Why don't you go eat a box of candied mackerel, you candy-loving sweet son of a bitch.
I'm afraid we're all out of time today. We've got to close it there. Thanks for joining me, gentlemen. As always, Professor Blasco Dunkelheit, appreciate your time, taking time away from the University of Blasterkith. And
yes, Valus. It was a pleasure meeting you both. Stay in touch.
And thank you, Necro Wraither, for your time talking to us today about the untold history of black metal.
Thank you for having me. Remember, don't swallow gum because it'll stay in your stomach for a year.
Good advice. We'll see you next week, everybody. Sugar. Oh, honey, honey. You are my candy girl. And you got me wanting.
Have a sweet tooth? Do you need something yummy inside your belly? Then come on down to Under a Funfetti Moon. We've got every candy you could possibly want. Almond No Joy, Mr. Sad Bar, 666 Musketeers, Reese's Pieces of Your Life, Everlasting Godstoppers, and Candy Corn. Come on down and fill yourself with sweet, sweet blackened goodness.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.